Welcome to the Jays Down podcast brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is with me in spirit, but he's having some computer problems right now or headphone problems. We haven't really nailed it down, but he gave me the go-ahead to go without him, and hopefully he'll be able to jump in midway. If not, we will just roast him. But also joining me today is my good friend and up-and-coming star in the NBA blogging world, Nikias Duncan. Nikias, how's it going, man?
It is going pretty well. I'm in a good mood tonight. How about yourself?
I'm surprisingly still in a good mood. The Cavs are doing their absolute best to crush my spirit. Another tough lesson for the Cavs tonight. They did not get the easy win that your Heat got tonight.
Well, we can't all play the Knicks every night.
No, but I mean... We've played the Hawks and the Nets. That's pretty damn close to the Knicks. So it's starting to get to the point where I'm wondering exactly how this is going to go for the Cavs. This is how bad they are pre-fire sale, the fire sale that I think we've all assumed is coming. So this could be a bit of an interesting year. But as someone that really wants RJ Barrett on my favorite team, I'm more or less okay with it. But while Carter is figuring out his audio, we might as well talk about a little bit about the Heat, about what you guys got going on at Miami Heat Beat, as well as the Five Reasons Sports Network. So for those that don't know, how about you do some plugs here?
Okay. Miami Heat Beat is, you know, I'm a little bit biased here, but I think they are the best site covering the Heat right now. Unique perspective. Great podcast filled with legit insight, but also jokes. You get your mix of serious and casual basketball analysis there. We're part of the Five Reasons Sports Network, headed by Ethan Skolnick and Chris Whittingham. There are, I think, 13 podcasts under network right now, covering just about any sport you want.
You guys are like, you're just swarming the scene, and I love it. I've been such a big fan. I've been on the Heat Beat podcast a few times with you guys, and it's always a lot of fun. You make a team that hasn't really been the most relevant recently fun to follow, and that is something that I think I'm going to need to strive for a little bit more in the coming months here.
Well, hey, you got young players that actually play, so that's a positive.
That is true. That is true. So what is kind of your sense of the Heat? Is at this point just basically hoping for Jimmy Butler to kind of turn things around? Is it the last dance, or are you guys investing more just kind of emotional stock in Bam Adebayo, Josh Richardson, guys like that?
From the Heat's perspective, it seems like it's all first priority is making sure Dwayne Wade gets his going away party. That's really the reason he's back. The veteran leadership, the passing still helps, but ultimately it's his last year in the NBA and he shouldn't be anywhere else other than a Heat uniform.
Well, are you seriously saying that after he spent 15 years with the Cleveland Cavaliers? I mean, he was a Cavs lifer in my heart, and I know things got a little messy last year, but I'm surprised to see you go with such a strong pick.
Well, you know, sometimes change is necessary. So I think we've embraced Dwayne a little bit. I'm sure he doesn't take his Cleveland years for granted, but Miami's where it's at now.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because the Heat, to me, are a team that have contracts that they take a decent chunk out of your cap, but I don't know how immovable a lot of those are. Like, Tyler Johnson, I don't think it would be impossible to move. Kelly Olynyk, I think, is actually pretty decent value. I haven't followed too much because we're just a week into the season, but how surprised have you been with Kelly Olynyk and what he's done for the team? Obviously, there's still a part of my heart that will always hate him, but overall, I was very impressed with him last season, and it had seemed like when he was playing with Team Canada, at least, that he had kind of added to his game a little bit. He seemed like he was in better shape. So what's your impression of him?
The Kelly signing has been a very good one overall. He was, I don't even think it's arguable. I think he was Miami's most impactful center last year. Just what he brought in terms of a spacer, his passing, the screening. him. He wasn't great defensively, but he did try to work within the team construct, so he wasn't awful there. Mm-hmm. He was part of a lot of Miami's best lineups just because of everything he brought to the table. It has been a rough stretch for him so far this year. He shot, I think, 20 or something percent from three during the preseason. He hasn't been great this year. The passing is still there. The screening is still there. So it's really just a matter of him regaining a shooting stroke, and I'm pretty confident that's going to come soon.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a big part of his game, because once that shot's falling, it opens up everything else. We're going to pivot just a little bit. One thing, if he did get Jimmy Butler, where do you see them kind of falling within the Eastern Conference hierarchy? Like, to me, I find it really interesting because, in my opinion, there's the top tier, which is Toronto, who right now looks like the best team. Boston, I think a lot of people are kind of projecting them to be the better team come April or May, or at the very least neck and neck. And then after that, it's kind of that there's another tier where there's Milwaukee, there's Indiana, there's Philly. If the Heat were able to get Jimmy Butler for a reasonable cost, do you see them entering that tier, or what would your kind of realistic expectation be?
I think that second, or even if you want to go into a third tier, I think they will fall probably in that 4 to 6 range somewhere with Jimmy Butler, depending on how much they give up, because I don't think they touch Toronto or Boston whenever they get their offense together.
But are you beating Philly?
They have some question marks on offense. I think Philly will still be a more talented team. But if Fultz doesn't come around, if they don't find some shooting somewhere, I could see a scenario where Miami could knock them off in the series, just because Miami has a lot of solid role players. They have Eric Spoelstra.
Mm-hmm.
Butler's the kind of star that they need in the playoff series that can get a bucket when things are tough.
You're not going arrogant enough. I was expecting a little more arrogance after what Philly and Miami went through last year.
They're sweeping Philly.
That's what I want to hear. There but what do you think of Toronto and Boston? Because do you agree with my assessment that while Toronto's the better team now, Boston likely will kind of overtake them by the time playoffs come around? Or are you a big believer in kind of Kawhi Leonard regaining form, and that the best player in the series is going to end up being what really matters?
It's a little bit of both, honestly. I do believe in Kawhi, but I think if Boston's in a series with Toronto or Milwaukee or even Philly, they're not going to have the best player in the series. But they have so much depth, and you have four guys with the ability to take over a series. They're just so deep. That's what puts Boston above just about everyone in the East.
So yeah.
That's what I'm saying. If the offense rounds into form, Kawhi might be the best player in the Eastern Conference Finals. But if you have Kyrie, who is ridiculous in the playoffs, mm-hmm. Gordon Hayward, who was good in his last playoff series, then you still have Al Horford, who was phenomenal last postseason. Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown obviously have leaps to be made. I mean, there's just so much firepower.
Yeah. It's funny. Al Horford must be really happy with how this Cavs season is starting off, because it looks very unlikely that he's going to see Tristan Thompson in the playoffs this year. And that's got to warm up his heart. I mean, especially if that remains the case, where Tristan is still on the Cavs or on a team that isn't projected to make playoffs by the time February rolls around, he might just send a gift basket to Kobe Altman.
No, see, what's going to happen is that Toronto is going to trade Serge for Tristan Thompson.
Man, I don't know if I'd have too much interest in that. Actually, Serge has been kind of looking okay. I know he had a bit of a tougher night tonight, but I'm surprised. Like, he looks a little bit rejuvenated after being on a pretty steep decline over the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's about time that he's actually playing more five. That's definitely where he needs to be now.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And plus, having him at the five and Jonas Valanciunas out of the starting lineup really does give the team five legitimately good defenders, whereas last season you could at least always target Jonas or DeRozan or put the combination of the two into pick and rolls. And mm-hmm. And that was a real Achilles heel for a team that was fairly well-balanced overall.
I couldn't disagree more.
There he is, Carter. Well, so I use the cover of you having microphone issues to give you some time to really recuperate from the lesson the Cavs just went through tonight.
It was about as ugly as it was ever going to be.
Did you see Ty Lue's comment that this was a better loss than their loss against Brooklyn? This is already where we're at.
Grading losses?
Oh, we're comparing lessons.
Yikes.
Yeah.
It's oh, there is right. There are their lessons now.
Exactly.
That's specifically what my coach told me. So,
see, the problem is I've been out of college for a while now, and to me, I forgot just how tiring lessons can be at times. Like, especially because I was less sober than I am now through a lot of college. So, my memory is a little hazy. The classes went by a little bit quicker than they have here. So it's been a bit of a journey this past week. But, I mean, really, we've only had about a week of the season here, and the Cavs already have four lessons. I think that's showing the potential for some phenomenal growth.
Oh, it's, my God.
Pretty ugly, man. I tweeted earlier that this is like, nothing they do, like, builds towards anything. Like, every positive play just exists in a vacuum, leading to nothing, becoming nothing. It's just a lot of Rodney Hood dribble handoffs.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's a lot of Jordan Clarkson. Like, there, anytime, as you said, anytime they actually do anything positive, it comes outside of the flow of the offense, and that's not exactly what you want to see. I guess if you're looking for some positives from this game, Colin Sexton had a nice bounce back game after struggling against Brooklyn. I don't know how the hell you can only give Jetty Osman and Kevin Love a combined three shots in the second half. Like, to me, that is baffling. Like, especially because Love was having a strong first half, and to only
they're not doing. There's no giving or getting. It's just stuff happening. Like they just didn't have to happen to roll that number on the dice.
Nikias, what's your opinion on the Cavs? Like, what do you kind of see as what they should be doing if you were in Kobe Altman's shoes?
I mean, it seems like the smart thing to do would just be kind of to give all their young guys burn. I mean, y'all started out the year playing, getting Zizic some minutes up front, right?
Yeah, with Larry Nance out for the first two games, which was getting those backup center minutes.
Yeah, so you're playing him. Colin Sexton has been coming off the bench, but he's still playing, still getting the nice dosage of minutes.
I kind of like him needing to earn minutes. Like, he's clearly has no idea how to run a team, but I kind of like the idea of getting him consistent minutes, but not just handing over the starting job.
I apologize for jumping in late, but have we discussed the coaching malpractice of playing him alongside Clarkson yet?
We have not. We saved a lot of the Cavs talk for when you got here. We talked about the Heat a little bit and a little bit about the East.
Every single second those two play together makes me physically ill. It's just like neither could possibly help the other in any context, really. And Clarkson being the veteran and like having that, like, it's Jordan Clarkson time energy just makes Sexton like stand in the corner like a doofus. It's just like, it's just zero opportunity for anything good to happen. And it's like, I remember like, yeah, like given the rotation, given that Hill's there, you know, like they're probably gonna have to play some minutes together, but I just didn't count on like that being the plan. Like that was their idea, was that they would play together. That's pretty obvious, right?
Yeah, it does seem pretty obvious. It was remarkable to see Sexton as a point guard go five straight possessions without getting a touch. That's that is some impressive player development. But Nikias, I'm going to let you continue on kind of what you think the direction should be for the Cavs.
Yeah, the direction seems to be go with the youth movement. Fire Jordan Clarkson into the sun.
Okay.
You know, other than that,
Nikias, Jordan Clarkson's part of the group movement or the youth movement.
I mean, he can help you get RJ Barrett, but other than that, I don't think you want to be playing him too much. If you're already getting Colin Sexton to kind of earn minutes and develop good habits, the last thing you want to do is play him with Jordan Clarkson. That just seems a little counterproductive.
Mm-hmm.
Seems a lot counterproductive, one might argue.
Like, Jordan Clarkson isn't terrible as kind of a bench microwave, but the problem is it does nothing for anybody else that's on the court with him. And watching George Hill kind of sleepwalk through these first four games, and he's only going to take good shots, so his stats look good. But you can just tell he doesn't want to be here, and he's not alone.
So this is just Sacramento all over again for him then, right?
Yeah. You know what's funny is, like, with him, it was like he's just doing his best Rodney Hood impression.
It's not good. So you're talking about walking around, existing on the court, looking very depressed?
Yeah, it's like they just exist. Like, sure, they hit some shots, but who gives a shit?
Mm-hmm.
It's just like there's no rhythm to it. There's no point. There's no, like, I planned to do this. The entire offense is driven around dribble handoffs for lightly contested 17-footers. And guys like Helen Hood, like, who are, like, erstwhile competent shooters, like, that's – they're just going to take, like, 9 of those and hit 3 to 4. And that's exactly what they did tonight.
Are you suggesting that that isn't a great plan for an offense in 2018?
One could argue. One could and should argue. This team sucks, man.
Yeah. The one thing that has really kind of stung these last two games, like, I feel like I got catfished by the Cavs against Toronto and Minnesota, because then I could at least be like, okay, well, those are playoff teams. They got up big. The Cavs competed. Let's see how they do against some of these bottom feeders. Like, there was a part of me that was thinking, okay, this team clearly isn't that good. They're not going to be able to play defense, but they seem to be able to execute, and there's the potential for them to kind of be bum slayers, but they are most certainly not that. And these last two games, I've been sitting here, and the one thing I've struggled with is my mind keeps going back to that early season game last year where LeBron threw the game against Brooklyn to prove a point about the Nets pick that could have gave them the same lottery odds as Sacramento if they actually got that win. So, not having Luka Doncic or Trae Young or any of the better prospects is still a bit of a tough pill to swallow, even though Colin Sexton has shown some promise in these games.
It's like whenever he gets to dribble and, like, play, he's looked okay, at least for the most part. Like, he's had a few growing pains, but, like, he doesn't even exist when he's playing with Clarkson. It's like there's no value, there's no point.
Right.
Like, I don't know, like, you know, there's, like, the discussions, like Nikias just mentioned, like, go with the youth movement. I kind of, like, think the best way to go to develop, like, guys like Osman and Sexton and Nance is just to play them alongside the best vets on the team. Like, if your starting lineup is something like Sexton, maybe Hood or Korver.
I think I'd go Korver because that's less demanding.
That lineup at least makes some sense, you know? Like, I can spotlight potential actions that one could do to generate some good looks and keep growing these guys. But as of now, there's nothing. There's nothing there. Like, Hill, Hood, Osman, Love, Thompson just has near zero shot creation or anything to destabilize a defense. And then the bench units have all shot creation, but no glue, no real sense of space or motion or even just instincts.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess, man. It's ugly.
Nikias, who would you start on the team?
I would probably go Hill and Sexton together.
Okay.
With Osman, Love, and Thompson.
That's fine. That actually, I might prefer that.
You have some similar spacing out there, and then you have, you know, the wily vet and George Hill alongside Colin Sexton kind of showing the ropes a little bit on court.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you kind of have to make the most of George Hill for however long he's here. But I really do wonder if things start to get ugly.
Start?
Okay. If things can, well, I mean, in the locker room, if things get ugly in the locker room, how long they're going to be able to keep the vets here without kind of selling them off. Nikias, if, so the whole theory behind the Cavs being able to move JR Hill and Korver is that next year of their contract isn't guaranteed. So for teams that are kind of looking to clear space, that could have some appeal. If you're Miami, like, are you looking at the Cavs to potentially get off some contracts? Because, I mean, Miami does have a lot of money committed to a team with a relatively low ceiling. Mm-hmm. Do you think that might be something that you would think about pursuing? Or are you just kind of looking to offload that through other trades and consolidate those assets?
In a vacuum, I would love to flip like Tyler Johnson for George Hill just because he's an actual point guard. Well, I feel like that would kind of make sense from Miami's perspective.
I honestly wouldn't even hate that. Like I'm expecting seconds and bad money for George Hill. So that wouldn't be the end of the world for me, even though Tyler Johnson is probably decently overpaid.
Yeah, the contract is not great. It was nice to see him actually play well tonight. He has shot poorly throughout the year, and Heat fans have been killing him. In addition to the contract, he hasn't shot well, so it's just been an avalanche of slander. So I'm glad he actually got some shots to go down tonight. But, yeah, some kind of swap like that. I want no parts of JR. I would love Corbin, but I'm not sure what's workable there.
You don't think Heat culture can turn him around?
JR does not need to be in Miami anymore.
You don't think that snorting the Heat culture would
get... Absolutely not. I think he's immune to it.
You build up a lot of immunities when you've led the life that JR leads.
That there you go.
I don't know about that, man. Like, Cavs guards do have a history of going to Miami and thriving. Look at Dion. Look at Dwayne Wade. Like, you have all these guys.
You know what? I set myself up for that one.
if they were trying to get off some money, I can guarantee you there's no way in hell the Cavs would take Dion back, especially on that contract.
Now, guys, I am curious, like, outside of the Miami bubble, because now that you're a big shot covering the whole league.
Yeah, look at this big shot. Oh,
wow. Thank God he didn't big time us before the pod started recording. But now that you are that, what do you think the Cavs should expect for these kind of movable vets that have some friendly contracts, but not so friendly that they're like, you're losing your mind? Like, do you expect them to be able to extract maybe like a heavily protected first if they could take on some truly odious money and send $20 million in cap relief next year? And if so, who do you think would be a good target there?
Maybe Sacramento still has cap space, and they're Sacramento, so that's always on the table. The Korver to Philly thing has been floated around for a while. I could definitely see that happening.
Like Philly could use George Hill.
If Philly could use just about anyone that could shoot on the perimeter.
Yeah, way. But they also don't have that many, like, terrible contracts anymore. Like, anyone they have that right. was, like, slightly overpaid is off their books at this point.
Yeah, it's just, like, Markelle Fultz, and that's about it. Yeah.
That's but, cool.
The other team that I could see is Milwaukee. Like, They're looking good to start the year, but that's a team that could just always use more shooting. Like, I think
OKC should be on that list too.
OKC makes some sense, but like Tony Snell kind of falls in that like Tyler Johnson category where I would be more than happy with flipping one of those veterans for him, because even though he's overpaid, it's still kind of a semi-useful talent that it would fit into a theoretical system. Although, again, I have no idea what this system is supposed to be.
So you bring up Tony Snell and not Dele? What kind of Cavs fan are you?
We've actually pitched the Dele concept, Dele for JR, in the past, because then you could at least get a trade exception for the gap in their contracts. But my God, yeah, Dele. That's exactly what the Cavs need, is another ball handler to take the ball away from Sexton.
Someone has to defend, right?
No.
That is, I think the Cavs have proven over the last four games that you don't need someone defending you. You need you can absolutely play an NBA game with nobody playing defense.
You know what? Fair enough.
Can I be lazy and just say I don't want to talk about the Cavs anymore? So can we just talk about the league?
We can absolutely talk about the league.
I'm disinterested in this team until they make some obvious changes.
Well, that's going to be very helpful, my podcast partner. I'm glad that you watched a full game for the first time today.
Listen, I've watched like 9 of the 12 quarters. I just hadn't watched a game start to finish till so far. But
I do is the George Hill to my Kevin Love.
Giannis is just a one man offense. Like, talk about like a guy that I actually didn't need a beautiful game offense for. Giannis is just like the best play in the league is still just a spread pick and roll, and he just takes three steps and yams. Good talk.
I was waiting on Justin to jump in. I didn't know.
I was waiting for you to jump in there.
I'm just watching them against Philly right now, and they were just getting their asses beat, and then he just decided to account for 12 straight points.
Well, this is exactly why Giannis is my MVP pick. So.
Is he? Okay. What are your MVP rankings for this year?
For the games played so far, or just how I think it's going to finish out?
Right now.
Well, no. How they're going to finish up. I don't care about right now.
I thought he was saying like what his picks were going into the season versus what he thinks they'll be right now. Sorry.
Oh, gotcha. But yeah, I would say Giannis 1, Anthony Davis 2. I don't think Denver keeps this up, but if they do hang a top 3.
Stop it.
Hey, man. Nikola Jokic is very good at basketball.
Look at me in the virtual eyes. Tell me you think Nikola Jokic is ever going to win an MVP?
It depends on media bias, you know.
I mean, Russ and Derrick Rose won MVP, so we've seen
Tell me you think that might happen? It won't. And I love Jokic.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, probably not. I'm gonna do it when Anthony Davis still exists.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if you're going to go with one, like, stat stuffer, it's going to be Davis.
Yeah, probably so.
He's been phenomenal. I think it's Kawhi. I still think it's Kawhi.
Kawhi's not a bad pick. He's playing pretty damn well. I still can't get over the fact that DeRozan, like, I know it's only been 3 games and this isn't going to last, but the guy's averaging 9 assists a game. Like, that
– DeRozan is?
Yeah, he would go weeks without 9 assists total.
Well, like, in fairness, like, there's no one else that can dribble the ball in the Spurs right now.
Well, he just had, what, 14 assists against the Lakers?
Yeah. And again, that's triple overtime kind of skewing it. But again,
it's also the equivalent of just the skills challenge in terms of resistance put up.
Also, the Lakers aren't stopping anybody right now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Ooh, and the Spurs are down like 30. Spurs are down like 30 to Indiana right now. So, let's scrap some Spurs praise now.
Fine. No, I really do think Kawhi was plus 950 to win MVP, and I just couldn't believe that. Like, the narrative's right there. This Raptors team is amazing. They make perfect sense. The only thing I thought was going to, like, really derail them was if Kyle Lowry got really old really fast, and it doesn't really look like he is. So I think that's going to get them to the 60 wins it's going to take for a Kawhi MVP.
I mean, that feels reasonable. Man, you know what? This night has taken so much out of me that when you said Kawhi was plus 950, I was like, fuck, have they really outscored teams by that much?
I mean, they're really, really good, Justin. Everywhere will tell you.
I mean, it's very possible the Cavs are minus 950 at this point, so anything's possible.
You know what we did with those first 2 games? And sorry, Nikias, for just going back to the Cavs after we tried to get away. But we did the thing that we did where we thought Dion was good because he played well in March after everyone else had quit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing, except we just got happy that they played well against the Wolves and Raptors after those teams had stopped trying.
Yeah, that...
Like, that what we considered good fight, part of it. The other team blazing around.
And part of it is also what we talked about before the year, which is how fun the Cavs are is going to be very heavily reliant on how good Jetty and Sexton are on that night. And I got to be honest, like, the two okay nights for Sexton haven't been tremendously fun. Like, he's had some fun plays, but I'm not having a ton of fun watching him just yet, and that's probably a product of who he's on the floor with.
Yeah, it's just like it's impossible. It's impossible to have fun watching Sexton given the constraints he is under. I'm like 100% confident in that.
Oh, man. And, man, okay, so the Lakers are losing to the Suns, which is great podcast talk because that's going to be...
Box, score, theater. I don't want to win the Raptors, though. Nikias, okay. Do you think they're going to win the East? Gun to your head.
No, I think Boston pulls it out.
Any concerns with Boston's offense? Because I was actually worried about their offense going into the year. This isn't purely reactionary for me, but it is confirmation bias. So I'm okay to be wrong. But I was a little worried about how they were all going to fit together.
Yeah, I think it's going to take a little bit of time just for everyone to get used to spreading the ball around. But I do think by the time April comes around, they're going to be able to figure out their roles and stuff. I think they'll be fine.
It's just a weird style to actually play in reality, especially if the guys that – if the defense is incentivizing you to funnel shots towards players who you really don't want to funnel shots towards but don't suck. Like, Jaylen Brown doesn't suck, but the defense is going to ask him to take 25 shots a game.
And he'll oblige.
Yeah, and it's like, what do you do about that? Like, you can't just tell Jaylen Brown stop shooting and stop being aggressive when you've got, like, Kyle Korver-esque defenders on him, but they're never going to be able to generate any rhythm in those sets. It's like those roles are hard to delineate when teams see four guys who are roughly the same size and they'll just say, well, I guess we'll just switch. Like, a lot of your pretty Brad Stevens action kind of required those specialists, I feel.
No, I can see that. I think it's also going to come down to Kyrie kind of forcing the issue a little bit just because they don't get to the rim that often. There's a lot of
Kyrie, like, I don't know, is that really what you want? It's still not high rhythm action. Like, is this going to be a pretty offense by the end of the year, I guess, is my question, or is it always just going
to
be
Rockets-ass
feast on switches? That's fine, I'm just curious because I don't think that's what people are expecting.
I think it's going to depend on the quality of opponent, honestly, because if you do have those teams like a Toronto that can switch everything, what makes Boston so attractive is they have so many guys that can beat switches because they have so many skilled players on the roster. So I think,
like, how good are most of those guys at beating switches? Like, Kyrie is excellent, like one of the best in the league at beating a switch. I think Tatum's going to be there if he's not already. There's a lot of guys who are like B minuses, and these teams are just going to funnel opportunities to those guys. It's just not as easy as people thought it was going to be, is my point.
Oh, yeah, you can see the rough stretches now, but I do think they'll end up working it out.
Mm-hmm. And the other big thing, too, is just, like, this team hasn't had a ton of time together. Like, you are integrating you're integrating a major piece in there with Gordon Hayward. Kyrie hasn't played with him either and is coming off an injury. So I think there's enough basketball IQ there that I just kind of assume that they're going to put it together. Like, I think it would be tough for them to truly kind of have an ugly offense. And I think you have some valid points about Jaylen Brown. But ultimately I can't get past how much talent they have. Like,
oh no, I think they're going to be good. It's just how good. Like, right now they're the 29th best offense in the league, 99.3 points per 100 possessions. Like, if I asked you guys to fill in the blank on, like, they'll finish X in offense this year, where would you put them?
Ninth or so, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I was going to say 8.
Isn't that a little disappointing?
I mean, it's going to be weighted down a little bit by how they were early in the season.
Let's simplify this then so we can take out early season struggles. If you just took like their after All-Star break, where will they rank after the All-Star break in offense? I don't see much better than sixth or seventh, and I don't think that vibes with people's expectations at all.
I'm confident they'll be a top 16 offense in the playoffs.
Beautiful.
But I mean that was always the leap the Cavs made, right? Like they'd go from like 29th in defense to 16th in defense in the playoffs. So that's it could be enough to get them by. I'm gonna be
nervous about it, and I'm not rooting against them or for them. Like that's the nice thing about having a team that sucks ass. You can just
hell yeah. I'm basically the only thing I'm rooting against is the Lakers, and I don't think I've kind of been shy in expressing that. Like, especially if somehow they do lose to the Suns tonight, that would be hysterical. If both teams start off 0-4, because I can just tell Lakers fans have wanted to stunt on the Cavs, but they can't just yet. And it's hilarious that we're a week into the season and that gratification has already been delayed.
Not great, Bob.
Oh boy.
They started Josh Hart though tonight, which I guess is gonna fix everything. So that's great.
I really liked Ben Golliver calling Kentavious Caldwell Pope. Kentavious can't play.
Yeah. I love it whenever Golliver gets a little cheeky.
Which one of you is in a wind tunnel right now, by the way?
You might hear my laptop fan.
That is a damn powerful fan, guys. Let's get your rankings on rookies, though, because I've seen already the Luka talk has kind of gone. It's been as awkward and as uncomfortable as I thought it would be. For whatever reason, the people that are pro Luka want to shit on anyone that went before him. And then there's the people that inevitably push back on that. You got people divided on Trae Young, people that are very, very low on DeAndre Ayton. How do you kind of see those top rookies this season? Like, what's your opinion on DeAndre Ayton to start off?
He has been fine. The defensive issues are still there, but he's also a monster on the glass. The face-up game is there. Turnover still in the post, but he obviously has skill down there. I think he's going to be fine. I still think Luka Doncic is going to end up being the best player in the draft class, but I don't think that's a slight towards Ayton. I think he's going to be a good player.
Yeah, I do too. Like, I'm high on Luka. I think he's – even when he has bad games, he makes a lot of things happen. Like, he's struggled with his shooting. He's a little bit streaky as a shooter from the outside. I think that'll probably improve as his career progresses, but – he just has such great basketball IQ, and he makes so many things happen that, he just seems like the most complete player to me in this draft.
Right. And I've been a Luka fan, and I still have been a little bit surprised by how well he's been able to create separation. I think that was easily going to be the biggest question mark about his game offensively anyway. And he seems like he's been fine creating separation on drives. The step back three is already in his repertoire.
I feel like his handle's a little bit better than I thought it was going to be. I feel like I often see that with European wings. It's like the handle's just not there when they come over. Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like it's incentivized. Or, you know, like, it's not something they work on as much as we do stateside. But, wow,
way to shit on Jetty.
I will say, I think they're going to start playing this behind-the-back move that he does on every catch.
Oh, yeah, he's going to need counters. But, I mean, the fact that it's working now.
It's a good sign.
I'm not sure why Trae Young is getting as much hate as he does. He is a special passer.
Because he's not Luka, Nikias.
No. I think the issue with Trae Young is that he's not Steph. And people got very, very kind of upset last year at the start of the college season when he was just lighting the world on fire. And they're like, oh, this is the next Steph Curry. And inevitably, NBA Twitter started kind of picking him apart and criticizing his turnovers and things like that. And I think for that reason, there's just kind of this resentment that's been boiling under the surface. He's fun as hell, though. Like, I really like Trae Young. I'm still disappointed that he didn't fall to the Cavs. But I think he's going to be a hell of a player, and his basketball IQ is just so high. Like, he needs to clean up some of his decision making, but he seems to be able to see the game at a really high level for a rookie.
I was watching their game against the Mavs today, and I just every pick and roll he ran with Lynn, where he'd throw like a really really nice pocket pass, and Lynn would have to catch it, you know, collect his wits, and then kind of like muster up a feeble attempt. It's like, man, with John Collins as the role man, they're going to have some pretty electric chemistry.
Yeah, it's going to be disgusting. And even if he isn't Steph, I mean, if he's Kimba with better passing vision, you obviously take that 10 out of 10 times.
That sounds like a pretty good player.
I don't know if he's as quick as Kimba.
He might.
Feels like he is going to get his shot blocked a lot, like a lot. And yeah, that's going to be okay because he doesn't have that explosion. Like, Maxi Kleber just like absolutely wrecked one of his layup attempts after he had gotten a step on him. Which is why I think like that's why the passing matters so much, because I don't think he's going to be an unstoppable scorer if that's all he is.
Right. And I think early on we're seeing that the passing has already been a fairly big part of his game. And I think that that's something that's going to continue. Before we wrap things up, let's set Nikias up to potentially be depressing on what has been a tough evening for us. What is your impression of Colin Sexton and kind of your comp for him? What is your expectation for him kind of through his career?
I'm not a huge fan from what I've seen so far. I'm trying to think of who he reminds me of, because he just seems like one of those guys where his athleticism kind of blinds people a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't seem like he has a great feel for the game, but he's also super competitive.
Like young Eric Bledsoe, or?
That would probably be where I would go with him, yeah. Like, he has great tools. He can get to the basket, questionable shot selection, some tunnel vision, but he gets after it. So he's going to be an easy guy to root for, but I'm just not sure how impactful he's going to be.
I at this point, I would just take entertaining. Like, I just need something to kind of lift my spirits here and make this season a little bit easier. And I agree with both of your assessment that I think it's going to be a bit easier to watch once the reins have just been handed over to the young guys, because even if it's not good, I think they'll probably play with a little more energy than the remains of all these specialists that were brought in just to play around LeBron.
I just want to take my 500th victory lap about the fact that some of you motherfuckers said you were ready for the LeBron era to end.
I still am ready for the LeBron. I was still ready for the LeBron era to end.
Now you're ready to be wrong then.
No, I mean, that's the thing, right? You make the compromise when you have them that, okay, you're punting a lot of kind of regular season fun. You accept the drama for a chance to win a championship. I'm having a
blast right now.
Yeah, okay. it's going to take a little bit, all right? But when there wasn't even the possibility of a championship, the drama can be a little bit much. And I think you're already seeing some of the Lakers fans start to get worn down to some extent. Obviously, I'm very appreciative of everything LeBron has done. I'm looking forward to his third era in Cleveland in about 3 years. But for now, I'm very okay with a rebuild. And I think this is going to be the tough year. And then things are going to make a little more sense.
Nikias, in case you aren't well-versed in what Justin is, all of this is just a clever way of saying, I really want RJ Barrett on my favorite team, and that wasn't possible in the previous setup.
Oh, I get it. It makes sense.
Say less, man. All right.
I just wanted to be clear what we were doing here.
Well, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. This has been an interesting episode of the podcast. I want to thank Nikias Duncan for coming on here. Remember, guys, check out Miami Heat Beat. Check out the Five Reason Sports Network. Those guys do a lot of great stuff, a lot of great guests, tons of fun. Even though the team isn't the most exciting, they find a way to make it fun. And that is something that we could absolutely strive for as well. Remember, to our listeners, support the podcast, leave a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, cook those books. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, if you leave a rating on iTunes, take a screenshot of that, email chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'll be more than happy to send you an invite. So until next time, enjoy your lessons and go Cavs.